This is WHFR Dearborn. Coming up in the next hour, the new WHFR Journal, local news and views. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. My name is Jay Koronick, station advisor at WHFR FM at Henry Ford Community College, non-commercial, independent public radio, right from Dearborn, Michigan. And this show is local news and views, which means the stuff that should matter to you most. It's right next door, happening in our community. We especially feature and jump off from, if not. You know, into a bottomless pit, certain articles in the Dearborn Press and Guide and the Dearborn Times Herald. We always recommend that you read your local newspapers every week, and we mean your very local newspapers, because often they have stories that are not covered in the big daily papers regionally, like the Detroit News and Free Press. I'm going to start off the show today with a special guest in the studio, students who are doing some really fantastic professional jobs as directors of plays upcoming. And we have three folks with us at this point, and there's actually, we have a one-act play festival every summer here. We have usually two or three or more. When in this case, we have two one-act plays that are going to be presented in Adrey Auditorium on the Henry Ford Community College starting next week, Thursday. And we have the two play directors with us to talk about these plays. First, I'm going to introduce to you Alan Devlin. And Alan, tell us about yourself, first of all, and how you got involved with the theater program here at Henry Ford Community College.
Well, I got involved with the theater program here after I did theater in high school for a couple of years. I decided to come here because I saw the Skryker, which was the virtual theatricality program.
Oh, yeah, that was capture. Multimedia type stuff, but very, very virtual reality. Very. We always do things that sort of push the edge here. I mean, really professional things and the kinds of plays that sort of like the kind of music we play in WHFR. Aha! We have our fourth director that just joined us. We're saying goodbye also to Bill, who is our new big band DJ on Fridays. And if you haven't caught that show before ever, because you only tune into the new WHFR Journal on Fridays from 1 to 2, our big band music show is from 10 a.m. until 1 p.m. But Alan, you are directing. Tell us, I got distracted here. Tell us your background. How did you find Henry Ford Community College?
Like I said, I was looking for a college in the area. I'm from Redford. And then I noticed the Skryker. I came and saw it. Well, I came and saw a rehearsal for it. And then I decided I wanted to try to get involved with that. It seemed like a really interesting project. And then once I started here, I did some tech work behind the scenes, scenic carpentry, stage management, and then now I'm directing.
So. Mm-hmm. Wow, moving right on up.
Yeah.
What does it take to be a director? You know, we'll ask this question to everybody. We'll just, don't worry. What you're hearing now, you can take notes. And we got three other folks here. So, how different is it? You started as an actor, perhaps. Most people do, but
actually, no? I started as a scenic carpenter primarily.
Ah, behind the scenes.
And then I did
okay.
Some stage management. I was deck captain on a couple shows. And then I just decided to give directing a try after I got invited to do the festival. I've never done anything like it before.
Right, so, and you learned how to be a director how?
We took you have to take the class in directing, which is offered every winter semester.
Mm-hmm.
So I took that 2 years ago, just because it was part of the degree program.
Right.
And then I enjoyed the experience there, and then I wanted to give it another try and take the opportunity, obviously, because it's not often that at this young, early in your career, you get a chance to direct like that.
Right, yeah. Well, you had a whole semester's experience in probably a 3-credit-hour class. And we are unique at Henry Ford Community College, folks. Your tax dollars at work, but a little bit more unique than some other institutions where your tax dollars are working in that, especially the theater program here has a wide range of experiences possible, not just extracurricular, but actually part of the academic program. Program too, in terms of curriculum. Well, we're going to talk to the other directors too, but tell us about the play that you're directing. Again, folks, this festival is actually two separate bundles of one-act plays, and so starting next Thursday through the following Sunday, the 19th through the 22nd, 8 p.m. Thursday, Friday, Saturday, 2 p.m. on Sunday, we have Alan Devlin's directed play, Impromptu. Tell us about Impromptu, and then we'll talk to Chris, who is the director of The Vice, which is also on that program. But Alan, what can you tell our audience about, you know, basic plot or director's challenge for Impromptu?
Well, Impromptu is a show which is kind of got an interesting concept behind it. What it is it's explained that these four actors, there's only four characters in it, are called to the stage to improvise a play, and then the play is supposed to be imitation of life in a way. So the whole lines are all supposed to be unscripted. I mean, obviously they are, which makes it really interesting, and everyone's playing an actor, so also another interesting challenge.
So the actors have to make believe they're not actors, but they're people trying to be actors. But in fact, they've got actual lines to read. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah. They've been just chosen sort of at random or from a group,
yeah.
and they're asked to act, but the play itself is impromptu also? Or
No, the
play
is
in the play?
The play is written out. It's just it's explained as being improvised to the audience. It's really interesting because there's points where they sort of do little mock improvisations, and then there's points where they're just talking to themselves, and those all build up and have different meanings and stuff.
Wow, that's got to be a great challenge not only for the actors but for you as a director, because obviously you're the one watching them, giving them important feedback. How long in rehearsal so far?
It's been 4 weeks.
Yeah.
It's really a short rehearsal period.
Well, that's true. A lot of people may not know, but unlike acting or directing for motion pictures, even though there's a lot of planning for that, there's not much actor rehearsal. When they get on the set, there's a little bit, but actors have to work somewhat separately and singly on their performances or the various interpretations. But with theatrical plays, there is usually a couple of months, at least Broadway, 2-3 months of intensive, almost every day or 5-6 times a week rehearsals, working with the director. Being impromptu is not recommended with theater, is it? You try to follow the script as much as possible. I mean,
yeah.
Some people may think, they just sort of make it up on stage. No, even though this one's supposed to have some element of that. I remember the name Tad Mozell. What period of time did he live in? Any other larger plays that you remember offhand, Alan? If you don't, it's okay here. It's not a quiz.
He was... This was written in the 1960s. He studied at Yale. I don't think he has many larger plays that you might have heard of. I mean, I looked at some other ones when I was doing it, but there weren't any really big name things.
Right, because sometimes that can be influential on the way you direct, depending on the themes or the inner conflicts that you might want to get your actors to get into. If you feel that it's typical of the writer's work, then you also figure, well, you must have had a little bit of that, to come out here. Maybe. It's one of those assumptions you have to choose as a director, do it or not. Yeah, I thought Tad Mozell was more recent than some of these other people.
Yeah.
Okay, well, Alan, that was your 5 minutes of fame, but no, just stay right here. Your colleague in one-act plays for next weekend, folks, this is Thursday through Sunday next week, Adria Auditorium, Henry Ford Community College, main campus. We're also presenting The Vice. And I pronounce that correctly. Not
yes,
The Vise.
It's the Vies, actually. It's the Vies.
Okay.
I'd like to thank WHFR for having us on the show. I really appreciate it.
Sure.
The Vies. It's a drama.
Okay.
And it picks up right where the action leaves off. It's about friends. The wife, Julia, has an affair with her husband's best friend.
Oops.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've heard about that before, but no, this is fascinating. If I didn't announce your last, this is Chris Call.
Yeah.
He's the director. Okay, you don't want to give away the ending here, but okay, so there's sort of a extramarital affair conflict between husband and wife.
Oh yeah, it's very exciting. Luigi Pirandello, it usually tends to be his style of writing. When it's talking about like how man is doomed to exist, you know, in an absurd. With absurd inconsistencies, basically how you can't control life. Like life throws things at you, and you know, regardless of your plan, what plan you might have, life has a way of spinning things.
So you got a very, very clear moral out of this play that you're putting into your interpretation and trying to influence your actors. You know, this introduction to the absurd world, which all of us live in every day, folks, and you hear about it on this show every week, in fact, the crazy stuff that happens. But we still, of course, is that something, the Vies, so they're in sort of this clamp that is closing on them, there's pressure coming in on them, and that's, of course, that makes for good drama, doesn't it?
Exactly.
You know, see what's going to blow up, you know, or explode or put people under a lot of stress and see what's going to happen. Both of them are dramatic. I'm just guessing impromptu, and Chris is here, he can nod, is a little more comedic?
Yeah, it definitely is comedic in nature
okay.
at points. Some dramatic elements too, but yeah. It's a
okay.
little lighter.
And, yeah. Well, and that makes a good evening of theater. Some people may say, "Oh, one act plays will both be done in 5 minutes." What's the running time? About 2 hours or so for both of them. There's probably intermission in between.
There's an intermission between. Mine's around 25 to 30 minutes.
Okay, that'll get us warmed up and laughing, and then we get Chris's
about 25 to 30.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
So.
And all seats, by the way, folks, are only $5, by the way. I'm looking at this, and we'll give summary information after done talking to the directors. So, Chris, just briefly, the bio thing. Tell us how you got involved with theater here at Henry Ford Community College.
Well, it's kind of interesting because I started off with playing classical piano.
Hmm.
And I rarely liked being in front of people. I was really shy.
Mm-hmm.
I was always a fan of the arts. So one day I decided to go over to the fine arts department, and I saw a rehearsal of The Wiz,
mm-hmm.
A couple years back,
mm-hmm.
and I decided, hey, you know, maybe I can try to do this. So I took an acting one class. It was very exciting and at the same time a little frightening, and I wanted to get into the productions. And one day I got a call from the head artistic director Jerry Jubelinski,
mm-hmm.
To be a walk-on role and in The Wiz. So from that point on, it's history on. I just kept on acting and taking classes.
The makeup got in your blood, and the lights blinded you. And he was blinded by the light, folks. And were you in the directing class too?
Yeah, I wasn't in the one Alan was in.
Right. Well, although some people have come here and talked about their work in the plays, and in high school they got a chance to direct or work with the director closely too. We got to move on here now.
Right.
So, folks, next weekend, don't just come and see the impromptu and the Vies and say, well, that's it. That's the one act at Henry Ford. No, no, no. The following week, June 26th, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and then Sunday, 8 p.m. for Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and 2 p.m. on Sunday, we've got two more one-act plays. And again, these are plays written by, you know, professional, high-quality, famous authors, you know, and we have with us the two directors of those plays. And first, the director of the play Red Carnations, Angie Lai. Yes?
Yes, that's right.
Correct. Okay. And Angie, same bit here, since we have to parse the time. Give us your bio first. How did you get involved with theater here at Henry Ford Community College?
Well, I did theater in high school.
Mm-hmm. And which high school was that?
It's down in Texas, O'Connell High School. Okay. Very small school.
That's all right.
And I ended up actually majoring in English literature. The parents mm-hmm. were like, theater is too hard to get into. But I always had a burning desire to get into it. So once I graduated, I was like, I'm going to try it. You know, and I saw directing was offered a year ago. And mm-hmm. I was like, oh, that's cool. So I signed up and I took the class and I really enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm. Great. Tell us a little bit about Red Carnations by Glenn Hughes.
Yes. Red Carnations is a 1920s, set in the 1920s. It's a comedy of manners. And that type of comedy really came about around the Restoration period in England.
How is that different from other comedies? If you can briefly describe it. I think I know, but maybe you... I mean, it's not slapstick. It's not Marx Brothers puns or jokes. It's comedy based on, what would you say?
Some sort of, you know, usually satirizing the upper classes. It's
yes.
high
social,
comedy.
Social situation. Yeah. Yeah. Either the foolishness of the upper classes or the conflict between upper and lower classes, like masters in the house and maybe some of the servants or something.
Yeah.
But even among the upper classes, you know. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And it's just got witty dialogue, clever dialogue. Mm-hmm. I'm a big fan of Oscar Wilde, who wrote a lot of those types of plays.
Glenn Hughes is American?
He's American. He mm-hmm. was a professor at a school, I think, in Washington, a university. Mm-hmm. I don't know really the name of the school, but he was one of the pioneers of theater in the round, I found
oh,
out.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So that was interesting.
Round is a lot better than square, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, King Arthur and all that, the round table. I mean, round is always better than square, but you don't want to be square. That sounds, again, we're starting with, your play is the first in the evening, so we're starting light here, and now we're turning to Chardé Davis.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, I've got your name from the others. Chardé, I'm going to turn your microphone on. Tell us about your play, which is the second one between June 26th and 29th in our one-act festival here at Henry Ford Community College. What about, before we do the bio, we'll finish with your bio, Miss Julie by August Strindberg.
Yes, August Strindberg. It's a play. It's naturalistic realism, so it's you could really relate to it, like it could happen in real life, even though the text isn't per se something that we would use every day. But Miss Julie's about a countess, Miss Julie, and her father's helper, who is Jean. And they're both very lonely and cynical. They're both very impulsive characters. And they end up having an affair because Jean is engaged to Christine, who's the Count's cook.
Mm-hmm.
And they pretty much are trying to find themselves because they're both very lonely and very different than everyone else around them.
You may have mentioned, I'm easily distracted, but the time period and the setting, the country?
It's in Sweden.
Sweden, okay.
1888. It's Midsummer's Eve.
Uh-huh.
So it's very whimsical and, you know, anything could happen.
Whimsical. But there is, would you say it's more drama than a comedy? Or?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's definitely a drama.
So this, it's interesting in that period of time, what little literary history I remember. Henrik Ibsen in Norway was also doing plays that featured women and strong women, such as mm-hmm. Hedda Gabler and... trying to think of, well, anyway, is that they were given credit, even though they were male playwrights, of giving major attention in theater to women in central characterizations, and therefore the psychology and the unique situations and problems. And so I always thought, and I haven't read Miss Julie, that was a three-act play, but in fact it's a one-act. Is it a little bit longer than what's the running time?
Mine's about an hour to an hour and 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
A lot of people don't consider it a one-act play because it is so long, but the way it flows with the way a one-act is usually written, that's why it's a one-act.
Okay, you don't pull the curtains much and jump in time.
Exactly.
Okay. So, but there's a bathroom break before the hour and a half,
yes.
Miss Julie, after Red Carnations. Okay, it's very important for some of the seniors like myself. Know when the bathroom breaks are coming. Okay, folks. Well, thank you for all coming by today. I don't know if it's normally a day off for you. Henry Ford Community College is closed on Friday, Saturdays, and Sundays. Of course, we'll be at the theater. Will be open for the plays. Don't worry, folks. They unlock the doors for that. But I bet you folks do rehearsals sometimes or other set design stuff Friday, Saturday, Sunday, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
They're all
yeah,
nodding.
Today we're actually doing it. Today.
Yeah, yeah. Well, of course, next week, that's, you know, start Thursday with the first two one-act plays, so I assume you would, just to let people know that, you know, WHFR, we're not the only people here at the campus struggling 24/7. It's also the theater department and the fine team under the direction of Jerry Jablinski, but these four fine directors, Alan Devlin, Chris Call doing Impromptu and The Vice next week, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, although Sunday's at 2 p.m. only. And week after that, June 26th and 29th, Reincarnations and Miss Julie, directed by Angie Lai and Shardae Davis. Thank you for being with us so much here today, and get back to work.
Thank you for having us.
It's been a lot of fun. I hope everybody will get down there and see that. Folks, also, all seats are only $5, and if you wanted to call and reserve tickets, you could do that. The phone number, which we'll give later, and we'll be announcing this throughout the week, 313-845-9817. 313-845-9817 for the 2 weeks of one-act festival plays, different each week, four different plays, two each week, here at Henry Ford Community College and Adrae Auditorium. So hope all of our audience can get over there. And now we're going to feature some important non-commercial messages here, and we'll be back with more of the new WHFR Journal.
Not all criminals carry a gun or a knife. Some simply need to pick up the phone or ring a doorbell. In times like these, senior citizens are often the targets of con artists, hawking shady investment deals and phony charities. Be wary of strangers in your neighborhood soliciting services or asking for money. Many cons come in the way of phony home repair services. These thieves offer major home repairs at bargain prices, but they end up taking your money and never finishing the work. Don't become a victim. Be skeptical of offers that are too good to be true. Never allow anyone to force you to sign something, and never give personal information to people you don't know. Get estimates and never pay in advance. If you suspect fraud, get the contractor's license plate number and call the police immediately. If something doesn't seem right, it's probably not. Protect yourself. Visit ncpc.org to learn more. A message from the U.S. Department of Justice, National Crime Prevention Council, and the Ad Council.
WHFR, the station making waves, is proud to bring you a special benefit concert on Saturday, June 28th, featuring Brian Vander Ark.
This mobile home has never been the last time it moved, I don't know when.
With special guests, Ellery. Join us at the Arab American Museum on Michigan Avenue in East Dearborn for the one-time Verve Pipe leader, Brian Vander Ark, playing solo and acoustic songs from his entire career.
For the life of me, I cannot believe we'd ever die for these sins. We were merely freshmen.
And the acclaimed duo Ellery, fresh off their recent top five placement in Pace Magazine's Rock and Reel at Sea contest. June 28th at the Arab American Museum, Brian Vander Ark and Ellery in concert to benefit 89.3 WHFR.FM. Tickets for this benefit show are $15 at the door or $12 in advance. Visit www.whfr.fm for details.
The Center for Lifelong Learning at Henry Ford Community College offers educational alternatives. Options include upgrading job skills, new career tracks, professional development, continuing education, or personal enrichment. And classes are affordable. Call to register at 313-317-1500. Henry Ford Community College, your best choice, guaranteed.
This is the new WHFR Journal. Welcome back. We had four directors, all students here at Henry Ford Community College, learn by doing, but they've had significant experience already here at Henry Ford, as well as some in their high school. And we've got four great high-quality professional one-act plays. You know, one act is very intense, and these sound really, really exciting, and I hope to get to at least one performance of both of those. So starting next week Thursday, not this weekend, next week Thursday through Saturday at 8 p.m. and Sunday at 2 p.m., one-act play festival here at Henry Ford Community College, Impromptu and the Vice, starting next Thursday. And the following Thursday, Friday, Saturday at 8 p.m. and 2 p.m. on Sunday the 29th, Red Carnations and Miss Julie. So hope you can get here. Tickets are only $5 a person, and it's going to be a great, great, high-quality dramatic experience from really talented young people under the direction of Jerry Jablinski here. So glad they could be with us. I'm joined in the studio by my co-host today and co-producer, our news director, Susan Morrell. Welcome, Susan.
Thank you, Jay.
That was the mic check. Okay, we know that's working. That's always good to see. And let's see what's in the news today. I'm just going to begin by a couple of things that happened in the Sunday Times. So I'm going to summarize those a little bit, and then we'll turn it over to you, Susan. So she's turning the pages of the newspaper as we speak.
We're very busy turning pages.
Oh, that's
here.
Right. It's the only local news show on the air. We can hear the pages turning.
Yeah, right. How exciting.
Oh, it is. It is. Because, you know, you turn a page, who knows what might be on the next page. Okay, we do read these things in advance, folks. I'm just looking for the stuff I might have circled. Okay. I didn't circle anything. Oh, my gosh. Well, okay. There's an interesting story in the Sunday Times, which is the Times Herald version that covers the local Downriver area from last Sunday. Just to give you an idea, Gary L. Thompson writes about Lincoln Park, and their city council members voted against approving the budget presented to them, whether it was from the mayor or their manager. I don't know what kind of system they have there, but they said the budget doesn't cut deeply enough. They want to cut the budget even more in Lincoln Park, and So that's very interesting, a twist or turn. Saving money is great if you can, right? That's what we all have to do, save, recycle, reuse, reduce, all that. In the Sunday Press and Guide from last week, Access, this is the news, Access, that is the Arab Community Center for Education or Economic and Social Services, I'll get it right yet. They don't even put what the letters stand for anymore in the paper. Okay, they used to tell you what the ACCESS stands for, and I guess just everybody in Dearborn, you know, more than 20 years, almost the same age as WHFR. They started about the same time, back in the 80s, under the Able administration for all those years of Ismail Ahmed, who is now the head of a big social agency in the state of Michigan. Of course, I can't remember that department name. Department of Social Services, maybe? In Lansing.
Yes, I believe that's
okay,
it.
Okay, that's what I have Susan here for. Okay.
Yes, Department
to,
of Social Services.
To agree
Services.
With me, even if I'm wrong. Okay, that's well. That's the spirit. But Access is Arab Center for Community, Economic and Social Services. And it provides a lot of things these days beyond that. They have a health department and so on. And because of Ismail being appointed to head this State Department of Social Services, they had the second in command take over for a while. It was very capable. And he left recently to take a job in, I think it was Lebanon or something. I mean, he's, I don't know, President University, whatever. I mean, it's a very prestigious situation, but he's actually out of town now. And so they asked John Artis, who is just retired or is finishing his term as Dearborn Superintendent of Public Schools. And I just have to say on the side, you know, that it's certainly a capable administrator, knows the community, knows how to get grants, knows how to work with a lot of diverse groups. Just seems like if you're going to retire, you just want to retire. And I thought I heard things like he wanted to spend more time with his family and not have to drive in from Grosse Pointe, every day of the week and so on. And But my guess is, in thinking this through, is sure, if somebody else wants to hire him, hey, why not? Second career, still got that pension coming in from the first job, oh boy. And, you know.
And the money's not bad either.
not bad at all, I'm sure. Although I'm not sure. Let's see, do they say here? Well, everybody wants to find out, right? Let's see. I mean, we found out that the new superintendent in Dearborn is getting a base salary of $170,000 a year, which is actually $40,000 a year more base salary than John Artis was getting.
I think that's outrageous. I really do.
Well, I mentioned a couple of weeks ago when this first came out that is an amazing boost in base salary, but they get perks. Like the new fellow is getting, I understand, or at least he's negotiating for it, a free car, a lease car to drive around, paid for by the people of Dearborn, the Dearborn Public Schools. And other superintendents and even the president of Henry Ford Community College in the past has said that they wanted that perk. Sometimes they've wanted subsidized housing in Dearborn, that they've wanted a house rent paid or whatever. So you negotiate the base money, you know, the dollars, with some of the perks. So maybe John Artis had perks enough that sort of, you know, would equal that same amount, which would be over $170,000, almost $200,000. But he's on pension from that, and it does not say what Access pays. There it is, Arab Community Center of Economic and Social Services. It was on the other page here. But I'm sure it's a nice salary. There's a lot of things going on. Access is a, you know, 10, 20, 30 million. I don't want to undercut it, but it's tens of millions of dollars of operating budget every year. May actually be more money than the public schools. I don't know. So he'll do a great job there, and you'll still see him around the community, and I bet it might be less stress for him, too. And I'm sure Access will be well served. It just, it's happened so much. And you know, some people have written letters to the editors years ago about people that would, like, retire from city government, like even in Dearborn, and immediately take another job with the city. So they're on a city pension, but they take another job in addition to that. And once it was, boy, talk about double dipping. This was crazy. I remember a police chief here in Dearborn. He retired as police chief, and then they rehired him as police chief. And he still had his pension from being police chief. And said, well, he's the best of all the new candidates.
Now, that one I don't understand,
so
really.
That was really crazy, is that he, and I'm almost positive, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. Okay, but I didn't mention any names here. So, but it was very strange because they rehired the person for the same job that had just retired from it.
That doesn't make sense.
Well, again,
I don't understand.
He had the right to retire, he did, and then he had the right to come back. You know, and there wasn't a rule against it. And here at Henry Ford Community College, not that it makes much difference, but if you retire as a teacher here, you can't work here for 1 month. But then you can be hired back.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. Maybe you'll do that.
Well, hey, double salary.
That's okay. How much you love it here.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it is a great place, and a lot of things going on besides WHFR, but of course we're pretty tough act to follow, except for the theater department. Okay, the new superintendent of Dearborn Public Schools, and I mentioned his name last week, but his name is Brian Winston, Whiston, Whiston.
Whiston.
Brian Whiston.
And yes. He's the one making $170,000
base salary, right? Yep. Mm-hmm.
Why is he worth so much more money in these hard times, teacher layoffs and budget cuts every week for the last 2 years at least?
That is a question that maybe a talented newspaper reporter can research, but I think it might have to do with those perks that we don't know the value of, that artists may have gotten significant travel allowances or whatever, so that the actual amount of real money that they were paying him might have been similar to Whiston, but Whiston just wanted more upfront cash and maybe not so many perks.
But you're just
guessing. We don't know. Yeah, maybe.
You're guessing, Jay.
Well, you know, salaries go up. Good administrators are hard to find. We have to attract good people, and that's the argument they make with all the big companies when they hire in a CEO for multi-million-dollar salaries, and they turn around and fire a bunch of people.
Well, I think Rose Bogart should jump in here and be asking this question, since she's on a crusade to lower taxes in Dearborn in the state of Michigan. I mean,
Well, we would hope some of I'm sure the Board of Trustee members are sensitive to this and that they will have a press release, and now that we raised the question, you know, about what's the differences there, and are they breaking even or what?
It's not quite fair to the teachers and the maintenance crew.
Well, this comes at the same time that last week, as you know from reading the papers every week, which is a wonderful thing everybody should do, is that they announced a firing of 170 teachers. I'm sorry, 120 some teachers, and they hope to bring back maybe half of them when they can work out the actual dollars and cents of it. But we have laid off teachers and not brought them back for the last, I don't know, 5 or 8 years, and about 30 to 60 teachers a year. And we don't have any fewer students, so what the heck is going on here? I railed against this last week, and I won't do it this week.
Ever since George Bush has been in office, by the way, this has been going on in Michigan.
Remember, and I pointed this out last week, but if the audience didn't listen or didn't listen to the podcast at WHFR.FM, just so they keep up on everything we say. I mean, if they miss something, it might be gone forever unless they listen to the podcast. Anyway, the fact is that the Board of Ed in the article claimed that the state of Michigan had to cut back funding because there was millions and millions and millions of dollars that had not come from the federal government. So all schools throughout Michigan are being cut back because the federal dollars, apparently were promised, didn't come in. So you're absolutely right about that.
Right,
this is not a state of Michigan problem. This is not a state government problem, although if they had extra money, they really should give it to the schools here.
But what is their reason for not giving it?
You know, talk to George W. Give him a call, although he's on vacation sort of right now in Europe. But in any event, call your legislators. You know, what are they doing in Congress these days?
They're shipping the money over to Iraq. I think you mentioned that last week.
Well, so that's been going on for so long, but we should not forget that. There is that should be the number one question because of the drain on our resources, because of what it prevents us from doing elsewhere in this country, as well as around the world, in terms of trying to straighten things out. That money drain is so huge, it's so monstrous, trillions of dollars. Almost a trillion now, and a couple more trillion, they say, unless we get out of there quick. And for what end? For what purpose? Nothing seems to have been accomplished whatsoever of a social political nature. George Bush has said, I heard him quoted by the fellow who is the chief political reporter for NBC. His last name is Engel. I think it's Rich Engel. He has just written a book about his last 5 years in Iraq, and he was on The Daily Show with Jon Stewart last night. And he said in an interview that he had directly with George W. Bush on this, Bush thinks, well, we don't really know if Iraq will be good or bad. We have to wait 40 years. We'll all be dead. And
that's insanity.
You know, I think we quite well know short-term what the problems have been, and it has not been positive for either the war on terrorism or capturing bin Laden. Yes, we did remove and kill Saddam Hussein, who wasn't a nice guy, but if you want to make a list of people that you don't think are nice around the world, it would be kind of long, and should you really kill people if they're not threatening you anyway? Even if they say they don't like you, is that reason to kill them? And so on and so forth. We have to have a resolution to this, and we have to redirect money to our schools, to environmental concerns and needs, and everybody knows that. Well,
and that's one of the big questions in the upcoming presidential election, mm-hmm. So please keep that in mind, people. Loyal listeners of WHFR, very important question.
Right. I've got a segue here to Wednesday's Press and Guide, because this very issue about trying to save money in the budget so we can keep the teachers. There was an immediate protest when the Dearborn School Board announced that they might have to cut back on middle school music. That is like junior high, folks, if you don't know what middle school is. 7th through 9th, something like that, 7th through 9th grades. Middle school sports and music. Well, several people stood in front of the Board of Education meeting last week. Several. That means what, two or three? Three or four? Making impassioned pleas with the hopes of keeping those programs off the chopping block. But Board President Sharon Domage and DPS Superintendent John Artis several times reiterated that no decisions on cuts would be made until June 23rd. So don't complain until after the 23rd. And you can watch that on cable TV in Dearborn, by the way, folks. That board meeting will be carried this coming Monday. Okay, this Monday is the 23rd, by God. No, it isn't. A week from Monday. Okay, so you can do cards and letters and email to the, but 23rd is when, you know, something has to be cut. They stated in the last two papers that even if they lay off all those teachers, they'll still have to cut money elsewhere in the budget.
Well, that's my point. Why that $40,000 extra money for this new administrator could go towards a lot of other things.
Well, it's already a done deal with the superintendent. I don't think he's going to write a check back.
No, oh no.
Now that he signed the contract,
he won't
and it's
do
been
that.
Approved. Yeah, that's
his
I'm
job.
I'm afraid
is,
that's legal contractual stuff, and so
apparently his job is to cut.
Mm-hmm. Now these programs, they do say here in this lead article from the Press and Guide last Wednesday that if they cut middle school music and sports, that they'll save $115,000. And, of course, they still have to cut millions more, but 25% of each sports season would be cut, along with cuts in officials and transportation. And so they're looking at that, you know. And I don't, you know, I have to say, I do believe that the arts, which means, yes, painting, drawing, and music instruction is so basic, so important for everyone. It's not an extra. It's not an option. I'm sorry to say that other than the need for general physical exercise that most of us don't get enough of anyway, and especially our young people, that spending on competitive sports doesn't make sense either. I trust there's a gym class everybody has to go to. I trust there is competition of sorts within those classes, and that's essential. That's essential to get people into a life of activity, physical activity. Start them early and get them into something they enjoy, or introduce several different sports that they might enjoy that they can continue later. Although I think we ought to teach bicycling. I think we ought to teach a lot of things, the whole range of sports and lifetime physical activities that people can be involved in, not just the big competitive sports where they, once they're out of high school or college, certainly they won't get a chance to play football or baseball too much. I know there's still some leagues within certain businesses, and Dearborn is very good at allowing even adults to come in and get teams together and play on their fields. Other areas, not so much. But that's and besides, coming in once a week to play a baseball game, that's sort of, or football or whatever, that's hazardous to your health. You know, that's a strain on older people, okay? Young people, maybe not so much, but it's like physical activity, it should be like every day, you know, like walking and biking and swimming and whatever you can get to do every single day, from young people on up to old people, whatever you can manage. And we need to start with that in the school. So that, we don't want to cut money from that. Or music or art. This is Koronik. My opinion is not necessarily that of anyone else here at Henry Ford Community College. But, of course, everyone agrees with Susan Morrell, right?
Well, I don't know about that.
Well, no, not necessarily Susan even here in terms of that. But do you have power? That was a big story.
Oh, I have power. I have power.
I mean, you didn't have any outage last week.
No outage. I haven't had any outage now for several years, because we had continued outages for about 2 years. And we complained vociferously, and our problems have been corrected.
Wow, that's great.
Unbelievably now, so.
Apparently, there were still some people without power as of maybe Tuesday and Wednesday this week, because the city of Dearborn was still giving out free dry ice. Bring your own cooler. And so that means they wouldn't have done that if there were still some areas of Dearborn that didn't have power as of Tuesday. I had power. I was down in East Dearborn. My daughter lives near Oakwood Hospital, and she and I both lost power on Sunday evening about 6 p.m., but my power came up by about 5 p.m. on Monday, at least when I get back home from school here, and I haven't double-checked with her. I know her power has come back out, too.
And
so,
if that was
a big big deal, big wind, swirling sort of tornado-like gusts that spiraled around and ripped down trees and so on. I had a tree behind my house that was not pulled out of the ground, didn't break because of the wind. It was twisted and then flattened. And this is the tree that was about 2 foot thick.
Oh, gee.
This is not a sapling, folks. It was twisted at the base, not pulled out of the ground, twisted, and then flattened.
Tree in your
big tree behind my house. Luckily, behind your not house. Not in my yard, but
well, it's a good thing you don't sleep outdoors.
Well, yeah, I mean,
you know, in your sleeping bag or something.
I'm in a heavily, you know, my area has got a lot of big trees, and they're even over my house too. You can't see my house on Google Maps, folks. Oh no! You can see all the tree all the tree leaves. But
in case you are listening online at whfr.fm, we had big storms here in Michigan over the weekend, and 600,000 people have lost power in Michigan since the weekend. Right. And this is from the Detroit News from yesterday.
Yeah, that's amazing. I didn't know it was that high. I heard a couple hundred thousand. But
yeah, 600,000 from all over the state, the various counties. And according to the paper yesterday, 87,000 still were without power.
Wow.
So that's quite a few.
Wonder how long it'll take to get underground power lines. Forever, probably. That's too expensive to do. But, you know, they're just unbelievable. Of course, because there's wires everywhere, folks, up on those poles, if you take a look. And to try to put them, bury them underground in some sort of protective, what would they call it, culvert or, you know, piping or whatever, it would cost a fortune, an absolute fortune to do that. But that a lot of newer communities have done underground wiring. And guess what, folks? They don't have these problems, even if they get a lot of trees. And so I think the neighborhoods, for the sake of the infrastructure, we should be investing in underground wiring for our basic utilities as much as possible. Of course, we have water underground and gas underground, but electricity and phones and cable need to go underground too.
Well, I hope the technology people are listening and working on this for the future.
We don't have enough money. There was a report on WDET's Detroit Today show, and we did move from the morning 10 to 11 slot, this program, to the afternoon on Fridays 1 to 2, because we wanted to encourage everyone to listen to WDET, who was able to, and their survey of local news. I guess they got the idea from us. 2 hours every weekday from 10 to noon. Craig Folley and others at WDET News Department do a fine job. Well, today they had an expert on who said, you know, state of Michigan, we're not investing enough money to even repair the roads on schedule.
Well, sure.
And we can't keep up in 5 years. Yeah, that's in the Detroit News you're pointing out. Yeah,
that's the headlines.
In 5 years or so, it's going to be a disaster on the roads. You might as well just drive on the on the sidewalks or something, folks, because the roads are, because we are not repairing faster than they're breaking down. We cannot do that because we don't have enough money. So what does that tell you? Alternative transportation, buses, other kinds of alternative transport.
Trains.
Bicycles, walking.
Trains.
Yeah, mini trains or whatever it takes. We need to invest in that because it's money better spent in those directions than trying to repair all these roads. Let the roads go down the drain. I mean, slowly. But we've got to take road repair money and put it into these other transport systems. Any combination that'll work out, you know, whether it's just improving the bus line. I've been in cities, maybe you have too, Susan, other than Detroit, that have bus lines that run frequently,
subways.
Reliably.
I love the subway.
Well, right, we can't dig underground here. It's too much mess under Detroit, I'm afraid. But we used to have an electrically powered trolley system.
Yeah, but, you know, I think the big
electric
three,
buses.
Having the big three in Michigan is not helping the cause of mass transit.
They fought it in the early 1950s, I know, because I was there and I lived through that. They said it looks bad for Detroit to be on these electrically powered, non-polluting buses. And, yes, they started with trolleys, which means that they're trains that are electrically powered that start and stop at every corner, and there was actually tracks in the ground. And then they moved, they kept the overhead wiring there that the trolleys used, and they moved to actual buses. I mean, it looked like Greyhounds, but they had only electric motors, and they could go a little more, you know, around cars and blockages because they weren't on a track. They couldn't move too far away from the overhead power lines that they were connected to physically. But they still could still go, I don't know, 20, 30 yards left and right and go to the curb and move away from it. And they were just like the nicest Greyhound buses we have today, all powered with electricity. Oh, my gosh, if we only still did that. Imagine if we kept those up for 50 years, we would have a state-of-the-art system where we had so much less pollution, and you wouldn't have to, I'm sorry, buy all that gas at $4-plus a gallon. If you lived in the city, you just use city transport.
I am not buying another car until I find a very good electric car for sale that will meet all my needs.
Yep.
So get busy, the big three. And if I have to buy it from Toyota again, I will.
Well, there you are. That'll show you, folks. That'll show the big three.
You know?
If you don't know what happened to GM and the stupid corporate thinking, see the documentary. It's on DVD. Who Killed the Electric Car?
And
it does have a wide variety, definitely. If you haven't seen it, feature-length documentary, it's on DVD, Who Killed the Electric Car? It's all about the one-year experiment. The GM had 1,000-plus electric cars in California more than 10 years ago. Everybody loved them. Tom Hanks got a chance. They were just on lease from the company, though, as a test for a year. Everybody loved them. Tom Hanks went on Jay Leno, and his clip is in there, and he loved it. It was fantastic. They could have been reasonably priced. GM ended the test after a year, even though everybody loved them, and said, people won't buy them. They pulled them all back, and they destroyed them all. Almost
Why?
All of them. They smashed them. They crashed them. They destroyed them. Why would they do that? People were willing to pay. A couple people wrote checks. $40,000, $50,000. Of course, the collector's value alone, you know, for even a failed automotive experiment, it would have had historic value, you know.
Well, because the oil companies wouldn't have been in favor of
I'm
it.
I'm not sure, but I think the only one remaining is in Henry Ford Museum. I got to get over there and check it right here in Dearborn.
Well, we're being held hostage by the oil companies, Jay.
Yeah.
Well, and the car companies are in collusion with them as far as I am concerned.
Freudian slip. They're in collision with them. It's called collusion.
Well, same thing.
Freudian slip. Collision, collusion. Yeah.
I mean, really, we're being held hostage. The United States of America consumers, American consumers, are being held hostage by the big three auto companies and the oil companies.
You may be in favor of governments, you know, saying after this year you can only sell electric cars in this country, but or cars that don't pollute to a certain, you know, to extent or whatever. But I think what's more important that sends shudders or gives direction to the head of Ford and Chrysler and GM and the others is not only all the people buying Toyota Prius hybrids, which should tell them something, and Chevrolet, we know their Volt car. It's supposed to be ready, all electric, or at least hybrid electric, plug-in electric. They're still dickering with themselves. I won't say what part of their body they're dickering with to try to figure out what to do. But that won't be available to 2010 or 2011. You know, that's still too far away. You can't. But just your and other people saying, my next car is going to be electric.
Oh, absolutely.
Or it's going to be plug-in hybrid. Plug-in hybrid, folks, means you can have a Toyota Prius-type car, which you know it is 50, 60 miles to a gallon around the city. But because they give you the chance to plug it in to your AC outlets in your garage at night, that range, that mileage will be increased to about 120 miles to a gallon. And it's a couple $100 option, but not under factory warranty right now, that people in California are doing, this plug-in. And Toyota hybrids with the plug-in feature should be available in a year or two. They might beat the Chevy Volt to the market since they already got the hybrids, you know, on the market. Well, just something to consider, but people have to make wise consumer decisions. Think it through, folks. What you do with your dollars now and what you don't do with your dollars, even cutting back on buying gasoline, people will take notice. These companies will take notice. And if you actually tell them, you know, like on WHFR, that you're not going to buy anything but, you know, a really efficient car and a non-polluting car the next time around, that will start changing things. And, of course, you have to follow through with your promise, too.
No, but it's more than a promise. You know why?
Okay.
Because I am mad as you know what, and I'm not going to take it anymore.
That's from the movie Network, folks.
And that's what all American consumers should be saying to the big three and the oil companies.
Okay, we don't want you to get too excited here. So read this public service announcement from the city of Dearborn about proper disposal of trees and tree limbs.
Oh, Jay, that's your department.
No.
That's your department.
Read it.
No, I can't.
Okay.
I'm not a green person.
Well, then tell us about the Taste of Dearborn to finish up the hour.
I have to calm down. Okay. A Taste of Dearborn, Wednesday, June 18th. The Dearborn Chamber of Commerce Taste of Dearborn will start June 18th from 6 p.m. until 10 p.m. The event is sponsored by Ameriprise Financial. This is a great opportunity to showcase great food. Great food. Don't we all love great food? And have fun with friends in a safe. Guess what? It's a gas-saving environment. So that sounds appealing to me. There are 16 restaurants participating this year in West Downtown Dearborn. The cost is $20. Everyone is welcome. Reservations are required by June 16th. That's Monday. And there are a limited number of tickets. Well, you must be 21 years old to participate, right. So there must be alcohol there. And
well, there's a chance there will be open cash bar, as I'm told. And Joanne Kraczynska, our blues lady, coming up in just a few minutes with Highway 61 Blues. She and a friend are going to get into this. Now, we can't do an endorsement of the restaurants per se, but the Chamber of Commerce is doing this for the good of the city. And in this case, it's, you know, the good of the, once you see what the restaurants have to offer. And how many did you say, 14? I think.
Well, let's see. Where was that? 16.
16. Okay.
16 restaurants.
And so within 4 hours, folks, next week Wednesday night from 6 to 10 p.m., you can wander in and out and sample food at 16 restaurants, all very close by, you know, one another on or near Michigan Avenue in West Dearborn. And a lot of people don't know about all the new restaurants that got in there. So we're not plugging commercially here any of those restaurants in particular. But just to let you know, Dearborn, hey, we've got a lot of things going, and this is just one thing that's happening place. A lot of choices for dining all around Dearborn, of course. But Taste of Dearborn is the event organized in West Dearborn. And what's, for more information, the phone number?
Okay, the phone number is 313-584-6100, and you can register online at the website dearbornchamber.org.
Okay, dearbornchamber.org. And I'm told, I wasn't sure yesterday, we did talk to Peggy Richards, but I'm told that you know, even though we have to be careful about commercial plugging, the chamber itself is, Joanne heard anyway, let's give credit to the source here, that all the money is to benefit the chamber. So all the ticket money won't go back to the restaurants. They're just doing it for the publicity purpose. So good for them. Good for them. And the chamber does many things to publicize Dearborn and the community. It's true. It's mainly the businesses and industries that are here and the services that want your business. But that makes it a more vibrant community if we can all work together and just understand what we got. You wanted to have a final comment.
Well, this is true. But I'm kind of in anger mode today.
Here we go.
You know, about the gas and then the big three and the cars and the whole issue there. And then also about Hillary Clinton, that she didn't quite make the nomination, in my opinion, due to the DNC. And Michigan and Florida were disenfranchised. Our votes were not fully counted, and so consequently Hillary did not receive as many delegates as she truly won, according to the way Michigan and Florida voted for Hillary. But there's an article in the New York Times, and it says that most of the supporters of Hillary are angered by what they consider sexist news coverage of Hillary Rodham Clinton's bid for the presidential nomination. I agree. I'm with that. And so that belongs in the media hall of shame. And the one media person who agreed is Katie Couric. And she says, like her or not, one of the great lessons of that campaign is the continued and accepted role of sexism in American life, and particularly in the media. And I agree. Cut.
Well, there. Yeah, and you say, well, Barack Obama, you know, he had the disadvantage of maybe racism can be hidden in strange ways, but no doubt there was some people that slighted him or didn't say favorable things about him. They might have had the wrong motivation. In other words, they were actually didn't like him because he was African American or dark-colored skin or whatever. I get to sound off now, finally. Paul Krugman in today's New York Times, on the editorial page, he's the economics professor. He does. He's at Harvard. He's written many books. And I realized this last Wednesday. We couldn't get tomatoes on our salads at a restaurant in West Dearborn. And so I hope they he calls it the attack of the killer tomatoes now.
I just had a salad with tomatoes yesterday.
But you know, there's many countries in the world that are still not allowing our beef and our chicken in. Why? Because we don't inspect it enough. Okay? And there's been food crisis after food crisis. The FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, has admitted, and it was in the paper a couple days ago in the Times, that they don't know how to handle all the crisis. That they don't have enough staff, they can't. Well, here's a way to spend that $1 trillion that it's going out of the country.
Right.
We need to have, and I think only the federal government can do it, we need to have decent inspection. And if foreign countries, who are not even here, won't take our beef and our chicken and now our tomatoes, there's got to tell us something, you know.
No, but Jay,
are they more concerned about the health of their people than we are in this country?
No, you know what it is? This is pure political motivation, because they suspect that those tomatoes came from Mexico, and they don't want to anger Mexico. Why? Because we get a lot of our oil from Mexico, and among other things, I could say some derogatory things, but I won't say it.
No, we can go on too
long.
That's
an issue.
Yeah,
it's a political issue.
Okay, I'll do 15 seconds, and then we got to close. It's 2 p.m. time for the next show. Dennis Kucinich, wonderful man. Credit to his office. Representative, Democratic representative from Cleveland area to Washington, D.C. He read for over 4 hours Tuesday night into the congressional record his impeachment resolution against our president, George W. Bush. And so you can check that out online, folks. It's not going to go anywhere. It was sent to committee, and for political reasons, I mean,